Hello, thank you for calling Podcast Phone. For Barely Podcasting, press 1.
Hi, this is Barely from Barely Podcasting Podcast.
Congratulations, you have selected the Barely Podcasting Podcast. The Barely Podcasting Podcast is barely funny.
Blah, blah, blah.
Barely provocative.
Blah, blah, blah.
And barely spontaneous.
So that's what I've been doing at work, trying to match my voice to the sound of the drills and the pressure things and all the gadgets and gadgets.
What? Oh, sorry. Sometimes funny, sometimes provocative. Oh, my bad. The Barely Podcasting Podcast is
sometimes funny. Sometimes provocative.
I like being without any clothes on, first of all.
But don't take my word for it.
Hi, this is J.C. Hutchins, author of the podcast novel trilogy Seventh Son, and I'm listening to Barely Podcasting.
And now, your host who's barely just arrived, Barely.
That's right, it's episode 69. I could not find that sound clip of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure Code 69, dude. But yes, that has been going through my mind a lot as I've been prepping for the show. First, I do have to thank J.C. Hutchins from The Seventh Son. Obviously, you heard him right in the beginning. You've also been listening to two parts of a four-part interview I had with him. And we will have that part today, part 3. And let's see, what else is on the docket? We have a lot of stuff on the docket. It is Barely Podcasting. What else do you expect? Why don't we just get into the show? Yeah, let's just, come on, let's go. Time to go with the show. Let's go, everybody in the bus. We're heading to the show. For you longtime listeners, I'm sure you know that where I work is a very conservative corporate office, I guess you can say. It is one where we get to wear jeans once a month. The last Friday of the month, we get to wear jeans to work. That's Jeans Friday. Unlike some other companies that have jeans, every Friday, we get it once a month. So that kind of, that just kind of tells you the atmosphere we're in. Otherwise, you will be wearing, or otherwise I'm wearing, like, polos and slacks. In the winter, it's button-up shirts for the most part, occasionally a sweater. And you will even see suits. I mean, there are people who will wear suits. So when I saw this, I just dead stopped. I think, going to get lunch. And this one guy walks right by me, has his identification badge, which says he's an employee of the company. He's not someone else who's in our building that is not part of our company, or he's not a temp guy. He is part of our company. And what is he wearing that made it stand out so much? It's a T-shirt, first of all, and that in and of itself just kind of stood out. But it was a T-shirt. He was wearing this T-shirt, slacks, nice shoes and everything, but it was this T-shirt. And for those of you in America who have seen the show Family Guy, the dog, I think the dog's name's Peter, if I'm not mistaken. If I am mistaken, someone let me know. Of course you will. You make sure that I'm always on the up and up on this, don't you, folks? But yeah, it was Peter, I believe, the dog from Family Guy. And this shirt said, "Sarcasm isn't just another free service I offer." That's really what you want to be wearing in corporate America, isn't it? What a way to get ahead. I ran into him again, and he had this another T-shirt on, mind you, that was like this whole paragraph of something. I couldn't even read it as much as this guy had it, as much writing that was on this shirt, but I also did find out the guy is from Europe, so I don't know if he lost a bet or something along those lines, but if that's how they dress in Europe, I want to be transferred to our European office so that I could wear stupid shirts. Sarcasm isn't just another free service I offer. Oh my God, what a way to get ahead at work. Folks, I'm sure this happens to everyone at one point or another, but when it hit me, it was just completely stupid. I got temporary dyslexia. And not really seeing a word backwards, I jumbled up the whole sentence. Yes, I jumbled up the whole sentence. And what we had done is we had one of the bigwigs come down and have to shoot kind of a video intro kind of thing for this big meeting. And the person who I was working with, who was working directly with this woman, was there. We shot the video and everything. We came back, edited it, and then showed it to her, to this one woman that I work with, to say, hey, look, here's what it is. Is this okay? You send it on and make sure this bigwig is okay with it. Which, for us, is normal operating procedure. This is how we normally work. Well, she, I guess, viewed it and then wrote an email saying, wow, don't you look great on camera? Well, when I came in the next day and saw this message, I didn't see it as, wow, don't you look great on camera? I read it and remember, this is going to one of the bigwigs saying, wow, you don't look great on camera. And I just sat there with my jaw on the floor. And since I'm one of the first people in, this woman is also one of the other first people in, I go over to her desk. I'm like, you can't do that to a bigwig. She's like, what? I'm like, you can't tell her she doesn't look great on camera. She's like, no, I didn't. Oh, it didn't. And we're both flipping out. Then she reads the email and she's like, no, I didn't. And I reread it again and it was, don't you, not you don't. Of course, that made me look like the complete and utter dork that I am, that you have here, that you know and love. When dyslexia hits, it has my face on it. Wow, you don't look great on camera. I should just entitle this show, How Not to Get Ahead at Work. I know I've mentioned this woman before, the soft talker. Well, she's done it again, and she has topped herself this time. What? I'm sitting away, working at my desk, and doing what I normally do, and I'm not even listening to anything on my iPod or anything. It's just dead silent. And all of a sudden, as I'm getting ready to turn around and just head off to the bathroom, just for a needed little break, I guess you could say, all of a sudden, I bump into her. She's behind me, and she has had a full conversation with me. A full conversation right behind me. I didn't even know she was there. No clue. I have a little mirror that I can kind of see people come and go. I don't have it directed so that it's right over my shoulder, but I must have been looking at something off to the side and didn't even see her walk in, but she is there. And she's like, you heard what I said, right? And I'm like, can you just repeat it one more time just to make sure I got it all? And so I sat back down and I listened to her. But, I mean, she talks so stinkingly soft. It was one of those things where I'm just like, oh, boy. It scared the daylights out of me, too. I'm not expecting someone to be right behind me when I'm working without maybe a knock or something at my cube entrance or something. I do that when I go up to people just to let them know I'm there. But obviously she doesn't, and she talks so meekly that she had this whole conversation. I just wonder, what possesses people not to at least make their presence known, or if you're talking really soft to make sure they're looking at you, not just working away. But yeah, nothing. Didn't hear a word of it until I actually knew she was there. Hey everybody, Barely here, and I am here to tell you a little bit about GoDaddy. I'm using GoDaddy for all of my stuff. I've purchased my domain name through them, my email account through them, as well as I now host on them. So I have the whole package. I love it. It has been great since I moved over there, and I would recommend all of you doing the same. If you are looking at creating a full web hosting thing, you can go through GoDaddy. If you want to just purchase your domain name, you can go through GoDaddy. And there's a couple things that I've been able to get for you for that. If you go to GoDaddy and you want to get the web hosting account, just go over to GoDaddy at GoDaddy.com and enter the code POD, P-O-D, 1-5, and save an additional 10% on your web hosting order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. But also, if you are just looking to purchase your domain name or anything along those lines, enter the code BLUE15 and you'll get a 10% off of that. I mean, what's better than that? So yeah, head right over to GoDaddy and do that for me. I'd appreciate it, and I know the good folks at GoDaddy would as well. Well, folks, I've definitely had a first when it comes to things that I've experienced due to the podcast. And this one was one I never thought I would ever have, but it did happen. I don't know why I'm laughing. It was just, it's kind of one of those, it embarrassed me a little bit just because it's like, wait a minute, no, I'm just this normal guy and all this. But we had kind of a podcasters meetup. I know I should have mentioned it before, but it was the Chicagoland Podcasters Meetup impromptu with Gabberjaw. Let's see, Oblivion from eBlow the Weblog and Podcast, and Philosophy Guy and Don't Tickle Me and Their Kids. And I think I mentioned Gabberjaw, didn't I? If I didn't, Gabberjaw was there too. I am such a dork. I need to take better notes. But I get there a little bit late because, like last year, I believe it was right around episode 20, I was kind of going through this whole thing on my wife going garage sailing so that I couldn't leave. And when she was done garage sailing, then I got to go to the meetup at the Blues Fest, which again is when this one was, and fell into the same kind of thing again, except this time she went shopping afterwards. It's like, no, I told you I wanted to go to this. So anyway, I get down there and everything's all good. And I meet the philosophy guy's family, all of his kids. His little girl, who I have dubbed as Fifi, came up and asked for my autograph, which is, hey, that is cool. I guess she does listen to the show. They all of their kids knew me, which is kind of scary thinking that sometimes kids are listening to my show, namely of the age of this girl was, I'd say maybe 8 or 9, somewhere in that range. I am terrible with ages, so I'm sure Philosophy Guy will call up if I'm dead wrong and be like, no, she's this age. But yeah, she came up and asked for my autograph. And I said, who should I make it out to? She's like, I'm like, how about Fifi? And she's like, okay. So, hello, Fifi. I know you're listening. I know I've told you all about the issues that I have had with my lawn and stuff like that, and that they were ripping it out to place sod in when I tried to seed it and blah, blah, blah. Well, we're pretty much at the end stages of that now. But what has happened is, since we're also in a new construction home, we've never sealed the driveway. And I kind of figured, okay, I'll do it this weekend because, well, the grass has been ripped up, but yet nothing else has happened. So if I accidentally get some of the goop, whatever this stuff is, onto the dead grass, hey, it's dead grass already. I don't have to worry about it. So I go off
I buy everything that's needed. I calculate out the span of my driveway. I'm like, okay, it's this by this. It should only take one, maybe two, but I'll only buy one because I don't want to have this extra stuff sitting around. And it's also good for 8 years, so I won't have to do this for years to come. Yay me! It won't be until 2015 when I have to do this again. See, I actually do sometimes think ahead. But as I'm going through, I did the first part of the driveway. I pulled both cars out, so they're sitting off in the street and everything. I do the first whole bucket, which is like 5 gallons of this stuff. And I'm sealing the driveway. It's coming across. It's just sealing up fine. I'm like, oh, that's great. And then I realize I've only done 1/3 of the driveway. It was soaking in so quickly since we'd never done it before that it took me 4 gallons or 4 buckets of this stuff. Of course, the second time I go out, I'm like, okay, I'm about 1/3. So 2 more should be fine. I go out, buy 2 more. And I get most of the way done with the driveway. And I'm like, okay, this is good. This is really good. As I'm kind of going through and swiping it all. Until I hit the sidewalk. I was kind of going over onto the sides, onto the dead grass. It's like, okay, whatever. They're going to rip it up anyway. That'll come with it. But then I got down to the sidewalk. And everybody in my neighborhood has this real nice, where it comes down to the sidewalk, it just dead stops. And then it starts up on the little parkway part of the driveway, which is a smaller portion. It's like, okay, that's nice. And everything looks nice. The driveway is blacktop and it's just black. The concrete is concrete color and it looks nice until you get to mine. I got down to the sidewalk and a big glop just rolled off onto the sidewalk. So I have this big black blotch right there. I'm like, oh, crap. So I scoop it back in and I finish up that part and level it all and make it all look pretty. And then I'm doing this little part in the parkway and I pour out everything. I'm like, okay, it looks like we're going to be close, but I think I judged it just right. So I'm swiping along and everything. And I get down to, there's maybe 4 feet going along the whole width of my driveway, which is, no, not even 4 feet. It was maybe about 2 feet going along the width of my driveway, which is 16 feet. And that was the only stuff I had to do, but I was completely out. I couldn't get any more of this goop out of anything. So, again, I have to run off to the store to buy this extra stuff. And where I was buying it from was the only place I could find it that was this long, blah, blah, blah. So it took me a while to get there. I get there, buy the last one, and at this point, I am exhausted, just completely exhausted. And I put it into the back of the car, and I drive back. And on the way back, I'm like, oh, it's hot, and my air conditioning in my car isn't working again. And I'm just kind of blurry-eyed almost, just I'm tired, just really, really wiped out. So I get back home, and I pour this stuff back out. And I guess in my tiredness, I didn't realize I had overdone it again. I put this big glop out, which was way more than I needed. It ran into the gutter. So I'm scooping it back up like, oh, no, that looks bad. So because of all this, and I'm just not good at doing this kind of stuff, I have a big blotch on the sidewalk. I have a big blotch in the gutter and then a random footprint on the sidewalk walk going into my house from the driveway because I accidentally stepped in it and then stepped off. But there's this footprint there that's going to last 8 years, if not longer. Next time, I am definitely going to have someone do this for me because it's cheaper and it'll look a whole hell of a lot better. It's just a strange thing now. Here lies a better life than ones I kicked around. Okay, folks, now it is time for the feedback of the show. That's right, this is where you get to talk to me. and I get to talk back. First one here I have is from the aforementioned philosophy guy. And, well, let's just get into it.
Hey, Barely, this the philosophy guy. Now, I've heard through the podosphere that we sound similar. I don't believe it. Check Love, Long, and Prosper, latest episode 58, and you'll find out more. Bye.
Yeah, referring back to the Love, Long, and Prosper episode, yes, I did hear that episode, and philosophy guy, I have no idea where they came up with that you and I sound alike. So I think there's something in the water in Arizona, at least where Love, Long, and Prosper is, that makes everyone sound the same. I don't know. Maybe it's like when I was living in Japan, we went to Thailand, and we were doing this tour of some imperial palace kind of thing, and the tour guide said, "Oh, all you and the mannequins look identical to me." I'm like, "No, we don't." And no one, I have never thought of that of anybody else, of any other nationality or ethnic background or anything. No one looks, it's not like, "Oh, yeah, all the Asian people look the same." No, they don't. I don't know why people think that, but I think that might be something that they're suffering from there in Arizona, just in that little area, like the Love, Long, and Prosper household only. I have no idea why they say we sound alike. Okay, next one here is Sydney.
Hi, this is Sydney from Robocast, and we're in Darnay County, and this is my friend Lee, and guess what? Woo! Okay, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Yay! I have no idea what she said at the end. When I heard this, and I've listened to this like 6 times, trying to decipher what Sydney says at the end. The only thing I could come up with, if you are a fan of the episode or of the show Friends, early on, well, if you're watching it for the first time, I'm going to give away a lot, but the show's been over now for 3 years, so I think I'm safe on saying what happens. This episode is where Ross is getting the naked guy's apartment, and Phoebe and Rachel are with him, and they see Monica and Chandler kind of getting it on, and Phoebe didn't know about it, and she's screaming, she's like, "Oh my God, oh my God!" And Ross comes out, he's like, "What's wrong?" It's like, "Oh, we're so excited about your apartment. Yay!" And he starts jumping up and down, too. That's the thing that went through my mind. I'm like, "Yay! I have no idea what you're saying." But you sound really excited. So, hey, way to go, Sydney, on whatever you're being excited about. Okay. I'm such a dork. We have a voicemail here from Jen Tucker from Tucker Tales.
Hey, Barely, it's Jen Tucker. I was just listening to your recent episode where you were talking about how your name, your actual name, rhymes with a lot of things, and so you used to get flack for that. But try having the last name Tucker. I'm sure Jason can tell you some wonderful stories. All right, have a good one. Bye.
Jen, yeah, I can really kind of see what Tucker can rhyme with. I am not going to go there, but... oh, yeah, once kids found out about that one, that would have been killer in school. So for Jason, your husband, and for those of you who don't know, Jason is married to Jen Tucker, and that's her married name. But it's not Jason's married name because that's his name. But okay, I'm a dork. Jason must have had a hard time in school with that name, but I still think it's cool. So, hey, I'm not going to say what it rhymes with. And finally, oh no, not finally, but I have, this is a big voicemail, folks, very big, so let's listen to it.
President Bush. Now, anybody that's listened to the Barely podcast, you know that my friend Barely, he's trying to raise money for the PME. What you may not know is that Barely is a proud American. He's working hard to help make George Bush get to the PME so I can debate Al Gore. I can't debate Al Gore.
I can't do it. I can't do it. But since then, anyway. So donate money to his fund. Send George Bush. Thank you for your support. And for your American patronage. Bye. Thank you.
That's right, folks. The President of the United States, whether you love him, you hate him, or you're in between somewhere, left me a voicemail saying that you got to help me get out to PME. So please help me get out to PME. Please, please, please. I mean, it's almost a presidential edict that you got to help me. And I am told that there might be a Bush-Gore debate. If I make it out there, there could be this Bush-Gore debate going on. So I need to get out there. The fund is slowly building, but has stalled here recently. So, hey, yeah, I did give the offer for the DVDs of the whole show and blah, blah, blah. Listen to episode 68 to hear the whole thing. I might make a little commercial for myself on that one. But, yes. Help me get out to PME. Even the president wants me to get out there. And I do have a final voicemail, and that would be Corby from the Twisted Pickle.
Hey, Barely, it's Corby. And I am currently in the basement of a local mall in a giant play area full of old crappy video games. And I'm listening to episode 68 of your show while my daughter's running around crazy with no shoes on and no quarters in her pockets. And as I'm listening to your show, you're talking about how at your wedding you had a lightsaber battle, and it was just like this big giant bucket of coincidence that as you say that in my ear, I happen to be standing in front of the Star Wars Trilogy arcade game where my daughter was having a faux lightsaber battle between Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. I say faux because she has no quarters left. So anyway, I thought it was very weird and coincidental and awesome at the same time. So now it's time for me to, which at least for the next hour, it's hard work being a good dad. Oh, I love that game. I'm going to go play that.
All I had to say, Corby, is, wow, that was funny. You're listening to me about my wedding reception with the lightsaber battle, and you're listening to or your little girl is doing the lightsaber thing. That is too cool. As soon as I listened to that, I'm like, ooh, where are my lightsabers? We still have them. I know, I am such a dork. But yes, oh, that is really cool. And also, by the way, I am recording this on Sunday, June. Oh, what is today? It's June 17th, which is Father's Day. So from this father to every other father out there who will be listening, it will be belated. But hey, I'm saying it on the day. Happy Father's Day. I do know that being a father isn't always the, ooh, it's great, blah, blah, blah. There are trying times, and this is the day to celebrate the fact that we do what we do. And if you're an absentee father, shame on you. I don't mean to say that as joking, but yes, shame on you. You should be more active in your kids' lives because a kid needs both a mother and a father, which is why I am glad there are both days to commemorate said parts of parenthood, being both a mother and a father. So anyway, and I think that's pretty much it. Let me double check. Do I have any other things in my inbox? Do I? See, I'm trying to stall here. No, I don't. I had no written feedback this week. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. And hey, let's get into the rest of the show. I think I've mentioned how my cube is set up, that I have a lot of personal things there. I have pictures of my daughter from all ages. I have like White Sox stuff. I have Bears stuff. I have me with the White Sox World Series trophy, which we're definitely not going to win this year. Our team sucks. But I have all this up, and I have an area where I just don't get – I can't really use that area. It's really dead space, but I have a wall above it, and I call that my rivalry wall. Just because, well, there's some Bears, there's a lot of Bears fans. I'm a Bears fan, and our biggest rival is the Packers. Well, there, that's the rivalry. I have some stuff up there from that. And then there's the Sox Cubs thing, and I have things up from that, and little bets I've won where it's been like a dollar, and you win the dollar, and it has to be decorated. I have all that sitting up there. So it's very much of a personalized working area. Of course, around me, I do have a lot of stuff that I need for my job, but this is kind of stuff that it's just kind of nice. You can kind of sit back and it's like, yeah, that's nice, and kind of making it the space mine. Well, this one guy who just moved on to the floor in this whole big expansion thing of another department wanting to take over my floor, which we're supposed to move someday. We never know when, but this guy comes over and he looks at my desk. He's like, you know what? You win the most personalized desk award in the company. And I'm like, okay, thank you. He said that, and I'm like, oh, alrighty. I have no clue what you're referring to. But it was just a guy trying to make small talk and all that. But I'm just glassed over with my eyes. I'm like, okay. It's also first thing in the morning, so it wasn't the best time. But he had just hit the can and then saw my desk and had to, I guess, say something. But yes, I have the most personalized desk in the whole stinking company. Okay, folks, this is the third part of my interview with J.C. Hutchins. Like I said, I've had a very hard time trying to do the breaks. So this is kind of still a little bit of the follow-up as I listen to him. Like, oh, that was just a bad edit. But we are talking about certain characters within Seventh Son. We do get into a little bit more information on what's going to be coming up, but yes, I thought I would just start it right up. So if you want to kind of figure out where we're sitting, go listen a little bit to the tail end of the interview on episode 68, and then this will tack on right from there. Again, I'm still debating if I'm going to do a web-only download or if I'm going to actually have the show set up entirely for the whole interview. I'm beginning to think I might do both, or no, not both, but there's another show idea I have for when I am on my vacation with my family reunions, and just so that there is something there, you do remember me. Something I could definitely set up early, because it would be two weekends that I would be away, and therefore it would be two episodes I would miss, and I don't want to use the last two that I have in my pocket before to keep on the schedule I have for myself for this year. So, anyway, here is the third part of my interview with J.C. Hutchins, author of Seventh Son. I thought it was going to be more about John.
Right.
Just kind of going through, since you had the introduction really with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if that's true of everyone who listened or everyone who reads a book, but the first good guy you find, is that really the one that you follow or not? I'm not sure. I don't know if there's really an answer to that one.
Well, you know, and one of the things that was kind of it was a creative decision. It was a deliberate decision to start the story with John, and you know, and yes, while we spend some time in the other clones' minds or the other heroes' minds throughout much of book one, nearly all of it is kind of told from, you know, his perspective. But as you know, the events of the outside world and the scheme of John Alpha start to kind of truly encroach on their lives, where they have to kind of get over the fact that they're clones, and they have to get over the fact that they have to work together, and then start to kind of get into the meat and the plot of the story. That's when the camera kind of pulls away from John and almost becomes omniscient in a way where we are, you know, where the camera's just kind of like out of his head, and it becomes more of about the group and what the group is thinking and how they're going to handle it. We do go back into John's mind in various spots, but we also, you know, jump into other clones' heads as well as the story progresses. And the idea mostly there was to make sure that the plot kept on going, and once, you know, I wanted John to be the anchor, the point of view character, right? But mm-hmm. but the further we went in the story, I wanted it to be more about the group. And, you know, I certainly haven't heard any detractors for that great creative decision, but I also haven't heard anybody, you know, clap me on the back about it either. It's just kind of the way it is. I'm kind of curious to know how people, you know, now that I've kind of illuminated that, how people might react to that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of it from my perspective, and God knows I'm not a writer. I guess I'm a disgruntled one. Having a audio-video production background, mm-hmm. I had to take a script writing class, and I started a movie script.
Yes.
And I started off with one line that really kind of pushed me forward, and then I started writing this whole thing. I got up to a point, and I just got writer's block.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I'm like, okay, let me try to take everything I have in my mind and put it into a novel. Got up to the same point, writer's block.
Right, right.
And I just sat there, and I've been sitting on this for, I think, 3 years.
I think that if anything, I mean, there's a couple ways to kind of, you know, you shake the rust off of those spurs, and one of them is just to start, you know, it's just to do it and just be mm-hmm. like, I don't care if I don't know how it's gonna, I don't care if that I don't know where it's going. I just got to, you know, push my forehead through this wall that I've been banging it against and just, you know, and become a wrecking ball and just frickin' do it. Another thing is, and I'm convinced of this, is that sometimes stories just take time. You know, Seventh Son, I sat on it for about a year before I started writing it, mostly because I had to kind of get the gumption to do it. I mean, it's an act of courage, you know, expressing yourself artistically in whatever way. And because it requires a kind of honesty with yourself and, you know, and being willing to listen to the voice within and being able to kind of channel that onto the screen or onto the canvas or the, you know, the music or whatever you're, you know, whatever artistic endeavor you're going to do. So, you know, I mean, my thought on it is that either just sit down and, you know, time to become a wrecking ball and bang down the door, or understand that, you know, maybe it's just percolating. Maybe it's just simmering, and that when it comes, it comes. It sounds a little metaphysical, but, you know, that's kind of how I see it. I mean, it's kind of spooky, this art, this writing thing.
Yeah, yeah, and I have so much respect for writers who can actually just pump things out.
Yeah, so do I. Because Seventh Son came in Herks and Jerks. I mean, it's not like I sat down and, you know, and just wrote every day and wrote 5,000 words every day, and then at the end I looked up and had a, you know, perfect novel. I mean, not only were there holes in the manuscript where I knew I had to go back and, you know, finesse things and edit things in, but also, I mean, it's like I would put the – I mean, I remember for you, Barry, since you've listened to book one, you know that, you know, there's a sequence where some of our heroes go to Los Angeles, and they mm-hmm. you know get in a van and they drive to the what appears to be the secret hideout of the villain, and they're waiting in the van and they're about to break into the lair, and I put down I didn't know where to go, and I put it down for 3 months. So I mean, you know, it's just like it just wasn't. I just had no idea what to do with it, and then it was Hutchins. You just got to frickin' do it. You know, and that's what I did, because I discovered that I was more unhappy not writing than I was writing but not knowing where I was going. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I had those feelings where I'm like, I want to finish this, but so what I've done is I went through and jumped ahead about 10 chapters to one scene, and it's not a sci-fi book or anything. It's actually about professional bicycle racing.
Cool. Right.
Tour de France. Actually, the big climactic scene is in the Tour de France.
Nice.
And I have them. The whole chapter is pretty much climbing a hill and coming down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole thing. But it all of a sudden it hit my head, and I'm like, ooh. And I just started going. So I've kind of almost finished the whole book, or from that point forward.
Right, right.
But I have the middle on how do you go from point A to point C.
Right, and it's so hard to do that. I mean, for me, what I would do is, you know, we talked earlier in this, you know, this chat about being cliffhangered and how you know, it's so frustrating and yet so thrilling for the audience to be cliffhangered. Well, it was frustrating and thrilling for me, because what I would do is, you know, I would sit down and, and again, it's like I had it, and eventually, the longer I was telling the story, the more I had a better idea of what the ending was going to be and where I would like all that to go down. But I had to get. But I had to get there, and so what I would do is, you know, I would stop writing once I got to a certain point, and I would plot out the next five chapters. I would literally write at the top of the page, "What happens next?" It was just like it became my mantra. What happens next? What happens next? Come on, Hutchins. What happens next? And then I would plot about you know, five chapters worth of ideas, kill the ones that I didn't like, and then I mean and then it was like, okay, so here's this kind of loosey goosey skeleton of where I'd like to go. And of course, at the end of this plotting, I would have a very big unresolved plot, you know, plot thread. So even I was cliffhangering myself. and you know, and the thing was is that, you know, and that seems kind of counterintuitive, but for someone like me, it was, okay, I have put them in the worst possible situation, and I don't know how they're going to get out of it. But boy, I mean, I'm really dying to find out. But the only way to earn the right to find out is to write these five chapters that I just plotted. You know, that sort of thing. So it was almost like you know, like a leapfrog in that way, just baby steps towards it. And maybe, mm-hmm. you know, maybe that'll help. Just what happens next?
Yeah, I've started listening to you, I've been more and more inclined to go back to this project.
Awesome,
that I have.
Awesome, awesome. Well, you see, it's something to think about it, you know, and it's certainly, I'm not one of those folks who evangelizes for, you know, do it, damn it. I mean, no. I mean, like, the harder you push someone who isn't ready to do something, the harder they're going to push back. So I'm real, you know, I'm real diplomatic about encouraging writing. I never say do it. I say, look, it's something to think about. And the fact that and here's the flattering thing is that you're not the first person who's told me that my writing and my podcast has inspired them to, you know, start thinking about, you know, telling stories again in prose or whatever. That just blows me away, and it's kind of hard to wrap your brain around the fact when someone says, you know, you're inspiring me. I mean, that's just that's the ultimate compliment. That's worth $1,000. That's worth $1,000 because that means that the work is kind of hitting someone in a way that is invaluable and is intangible and motivating them, and that's beyond price. And so I'm really. Yeah, I'm amazed to hear that. And all I can say is that, you know, hey, look, I mean, what do you have to lose? I mean, it's not like you have to show anybody what you're writing, and it's not like you have to print it out and, you know, give it to the Library of Congress. Nothing like that at all. It's just, you know, just something to noodle on and think about. And like I said, I mean, the whole concept for people who are stuck, and I know this from experience, the comment, the mantra, what happens next, became so important to me because in the end, Barry, I knew what was going to happen next. I began mm-hmm. to see what I knew in my heart of hearts what was going to happen next, but I didn't have the foresight to be able to express it tangibly, and so that's why it became so helpful for me.
Yeah, I think I'll start using that now from this point forward. Once I get back into writing it.
Well, sure. And, you know, I have to give credit where credit is due. I mean, the idea of what happens next, those words literally came from a New York Times bestselling novelist named Brad Meltzer, who writes, I think he's a brilliant writer, and he writes fantastic legal and political thrillers. And I have the good fortune of knowing him quasi personally. I mean, like, you know, we've spoken, met through, professional friends or whatever. And, mm-hmm. and I remember going to a book signing of his and kind of laying it out, much like you, Barry, where it's like, I'm in the second act. I think I know where all this is going to end, but I'm stuck. And that's when he turned to me and said, you know, you know the answer to this question in your heart, but you have to keep asking it, you know, what happens next. And as soon as I heard that, it became clear, and it changed my life, and it changed my work ethic.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing how just something so small can change everything.
And seemingly underwhelming, because the words, what happens next, that doesn't sound very profound.
No, it doesn't, but yet at the same time.
But yeah, give it a shot. Let's see. I mean, you know, it's free advice. I mean, you see what you can do with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's always that little quirky thing that just gets you moving. Mm-hmm. And what – actually, I did want to kind of ask you this one. Is when you sit down to record, mm-hmm. are there any quirky things you do? I mean, like Scott Sigler, I mean, we've mentioned him before, he goes into his closet.
Right.
And, I mean, I'm sitting in a basement, for crying out mm-hmm. loud, with the washing machine and the heater right behind me.
Right.
and my computer open. I mean, I can look into my computer because it overheats otherwise.
Right.
But and then I always have to sit at like the edge of my chair, otherwise it squeaks.
Yes.
And there's all these little quirky things little I rituals. Have to do before yeah. I start. Yeah. What do you have to do?
Well, let's see. Well, you know, I record in a spare bedroom here in our apartment, and it's kind of like our I'm not going to say library because that makes it sound like it's a really, you know, a really impressive collection of books. It's not. It's just, you know, a couple of $30 bookshelves stocked with, you know, paperbacks and thrillers and whatnot. Comic books in my case, and that's really it. So it's pretty a fairly innocuous surroundings, and before like back in the day with book one, I would often because I didn't know the characters. The characters are much more part of my life now, and I'm much more. I find it much easier to get into vocal character with them when I perform for the podcast these days. It wasn't always like that, and so there was a ritual at one time where I would, you know, walk around the apartment and kind of rehearse these voices. And in particular, I remember inventing the voice for a corrupt oil baron named A.U. Rookman, who has mm-hmm. this wonderful just kind of like screw the world attitude and screw the world voice. And I remember waving my arms and running around the house, you know, trying to find his voice and finally nailing it and then dashing into the room to record it. These days, I think because it's become a much more predictable routine for me. I am able to, you know, what are my rituals? Well, you know, I get a big, tall mason glass of water, and that's what I do. And I swap out my comfy squeaky chair for the very uncomfortable metal folding chair that does not squeak. And I read my names, but I read the chapter that I'm going to record. I read it once, and then I just fire it out. And typically, that's about it. But when we get to doing the character voices, and I'm really, really, despite the fact that I'm not an actor, I'm very proud that so many people have complimented me on my performance of the characters for Seventh Son, because they're all very different voices. When I get to a character dialogue for Jack, for instance, I will often have to kind of get into that character very quickly. And what I will do, I've assigned ritualistic phrases to say that aren't in the novel at all. They're just things that I say to kind of get me into character. Jack is the one that a voice that I often have trouble with. So I have to say, I'm Jack. I'm curious. And as I say, I'm curious, I raise my voice. And now I can talk like Jack. Oh, da 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 da. And you know, while there isn't a whole lot of difference, let's face it, between my voice of J.C. Hutchins and Jack's voice, there is enough to so that you can kind of distinguish it with Kilroy 2.0, who is he's an obese mad hacker. He demands a certain kind of attitude and a certain kind of presentation, and he's known for his chuckle. So what I'll do to get into character for Kilroy is I'll begin to chuckle, and then I can tremble my voice and shake my head back and forth to talk like Kilroy 2.0. And it requires that kind of leap into that spot in my mind. So now the kooky rituals are often kind of what I do during recording to get into character.
You've killed off several of the clones. I'm not going to say who because you have to listen to the story.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. But yeah, there no one of the things that I wanted to make clear, and I think this is influenced by Joss Whedon's work. I mean, you know, Buffy, Angel, Firefly. Mm-hmm. Is that in his comic book work? Is that no one is ever safe in his stories, and that, you know, when things are at their most serene, you better watch out because that's when someone's going to get it. And I kind of carried that into Seventh Son, where I wanted to make sure that people knew by the middle of book two that you can't count on anybody surviving.
But then again, you cannot also can't. Expect anyone to actually die.
To be dead because of the technology that's in the book, right? Where, you know, our villain in particular has been misusing technology that allows him to be able to record his consciousness, the entirety of his human memories, and to dump them into victims' minds so that he can actually live on in another body in a way and control that body with his psyche downloaded in the mind. So you know, that's one of the big problems that the clones faced in book two for such wonderful reasons. I mean, it's like one of my favorite plot twists of all is in book two. But particularly, you know, that's a problem they're going to have to solve in book three, where it's like, if you cannot identify the villain in any kind of obvious way, how do you take him down when he can be anyone or anywhere? And so, right, you know, there's this idea of nobody's safe, but the villain may not. You could stomp on the cockroach and here comes another one. You know, it's like how many of him is out there? And that's something that we'll learn in book three.
Oh, that's good to know that's coming up, because I've been wondering that myself.
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard to keep track. I mean, it's like we have enough scenes in books one and two with the villains kind of doing the machinations of the villains, where they're, you know, they're twirling their mustaches and they're, you know, speaking, you know, they're sharing their plan, but they're not revealing everything to the listener. Those scenes were so hard to write because, you know, it's like, how can I give hints without blowing the plot twists? And we've gleaned enough information to know that there seems to be a small number of copies of the villain and a small number of copies of the assassin thug sidekick named Devlin. But not everybody's accounted for. So there's still some tricks up my sleeve for that.
Yeah, you've let out just enough that everyone I know that I've talked to and gotten to listen, they're all kind of sitting there going, okay, what the heck is going on? Why is this character in there? And I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
But it's three books.
We got to wait. And it's my sincerest hope that everybody enjoys the ending. Otherwise, I mean, it'll be like the biggest con in podcasting. unintentional con. I swear. I guess I'm just a lousy writer.
And yes, folks, that is it. That wraps up episode 60. 69. I am such a dork. 69, dude. I really wish I could have found that sound clip. But yes, I do want to thank again J.C. Hutchins for giving me the intro for the show, as well as going through and actually sitting down and talking with me for... it was about an hour and a half to 2 hours that we were just kind of talking and including the interview before and after and all this kind of stuff. So I definitely thank him again for that. If you haven't started listening to the show, to Seven Son, you got to go listen to it. You're in the perfect part to do it, because you will go right in. You won't be cliffhangered for, oh, how many weeks have we been cliffhangered? But you won't be, because you'll finish it off and then go right into the next one and then have to wait a week, and like everyone else has to do anyway. But you're right at the perfect point. So anyway, hey, here is all my contact information. I will talk to you next week when we get out of the 60s and we are into episode number 70. You can visit the website at barelypodcasting.com. You can send me an email at barely@barelypodcasting.com. You could send me a Skype message at Barely. Of course. What else would I be? Also, you can look me up on Twitter. And my name there is Barely. Of course. What else would it be again? You can also leave me a voicemail, which so many people do. It makes me feel like I'm loved. And that number is area code 206-984-3675, which also spells out dork. Hey, that's me, isn't it? And also, the music on today's show is all provided by the PodSafe Music Network over at music.podshow.com. And the intro and extra music that is part of every show now, which was so graciously provided by some of you, the fans of the show. That song is Happy by Jamie Brancher. And he is also over at the PodSafe Music Network. So yeah, go definitely check him out. And I think that is going to be it. How the hell can I do any work with this? Last things before I go, folks. First of all, remember, if you need to update your domain names or you want a domain name, go over to GoDaddy.com and use the code word blue, BLU15. If you need your web domain and you want to host on GoDaddy, use the code word pod15, POD15. That will also get, both of them will get you a 10% discount at checkout. So, hey, that's cool. You'll appreciate it. And I know GoDaddy will as well. Also, this show can be found on some of the best directories out there, including iTunes, Podcast Pickle, and Blueberry.com. So, yes, go check them out. And I think that is it. I will see you all next week, folks.